Welcome, everyone, to this week's episode of Reanimated. As always, I am here in Brooklyn. I'm H.A. Conrad, along with my awesome co-host and intrepid co-host, Stuart Tiffin. He is out there in California. How are you doing, Stuart?
Wunderbar. How are you today?
Good, good. You know, living the dream here in Brooklyn. We're still holding steady so far in terms of our numbers not being with new infections and things like that. So New York's still doing okay, but I think, you know, they just announced a few things that were supposed to happen, but they just have decided not to take that off the table. So it's supposed to be phase four of reopening. They have basically said that restaurants are going to have to deal with not having people inside until October. And they've extended all the licenses for the restaurants to be able to have, like, the temporary outdoor space.
How's that working in New York? Are sidewalks really big enough to accommodate more than just a handful of tables?
I think it depends on where you are. And they've also kind of shut down a few streets to traffic and that kind of thing. I will tell you, there's been some stuff. I mean, there's specific things that have come out that some people are being really stupid. Like, there's been pool parties in Long Island City. And apparently, Steinway Street in Astoria is all like Sodom and Gomorrah over there. Like, the photos are just totally bananas. There's just people just all in the streets without masks, like, going nuts. It looks like a big frat party. So kind of worried about that kind of stuff. But otherwise, you know, in terms of the restaurants, people are being pretty careful. We have only done that once at this point, and it was basically we deliberately chose a day that wasn't very crowded, so we were pretty much the only people in the outdoor space. The only other people were probably, like, it looked like they were, like, a block away from us where we were sitting, and then you know, but this happens to be a restaurant where we know the owners pretty well and we wanted to support them, and they're struggling, like, a lot. You know, one of the things that they were saying is that, you know, that, like, so many, like, yeah, lots of people were doing takeout, but they were doing it through, like, DoorDash and Seamless and stuff like that, which takes 30% to 40% of the profit. And then they said, you know, look, we're totally dependent for this outdoor dining, like, on the weather, and it had been raining, like, every week, and then people are less likely to come out. So they're really holding on by their fingernails and that. But that said, it was really nice to sit at a table under a tree. And this was, you know, we chose this because it seemed like wasn't a ton of people out that day. And this is a side street, so it's not a main. I think it's probably a lot more crowded depending on what part of the city you're in. And this is just literally in our neighborhood. So, so I mean, I think it's working-ish, but, you know, I think it's going to be tough. And
It just seems like it's ripe, everything. It's ripe for, you know, issues where some restaurants just don't have that space, or they never had an outdoor eating area, and now they've got to go out and buy the tables and chairs and crap. It's just an additional expense. I mean, so they can make money, but it's an additional expense, and it feels like, yeah, I mean, like, all businesses are having to face pretty tough decisions right now. Restaurants really seem to be getting ping-ponged around, too, because restaurants were opened again, right? Indoor dining was a thing here a week and a half ago. It turns out it was a terrible idea, but now restaurants are, like, pivoting again back to takeout and back to maybe some outdoor dining if that's something that they can even do. So it's just, yeah, well, it sucks. So this country is completely screwed, as you can tell by the numbers. If you're looking at, like, new confirmed cases, and I know that these numbers taken with a grain of salt because turns out testing is completely BS. But Texas, Florida, California, not New Jersey. New Jersey, New York, great. Illinois is having a little bounce back. Arizona's up crazy, but still, like, lower numbers than Florida and California. But still, like, if you look at the graph, they are definitely experiencing a peak.
Well,
and just down the line, like, all states, basically, other than New York and New Jersey.
And that is actually in part why they decided to claw back a little bit of what they had said they were going to do with the opening, because basically the indoor dining and bars, apparently in Texas, that's a huge part of what's driving it, in addition to the non-mask wearing people, which yeah. I think is just dumb as all get out. So they were just figuring, and not to, you know, start a debate or get too crazy here, but I will point out that if this is what we're looking at with just a few weeks of sort of restrictions being lifted and things like that, and in some places they never had them. I mean, let's face it, Florida never mm-hmm. really had any restrictions.
No.
But I find it really, like, look, I don't have kids, so I don't have, like, a dog in this fight. But I think when you see companies and when you see, like, governments, like state governments saying it's too dangerous to reopen offices and restaurants and things like that, I find it a little bit weird that you would think about sending your kids back into that environment. I get it, and I get that there's so many different horrible, like, there's a calculus you have to do in terms of, like, people trying to go to work. I know that it's very hard on parents, but I will tell you, if I had a kid, I wouldn't be sending him to school. Personally, not unless you could really guarantee some, like, real, like, restrictions in terms of, like, how they were being taught and that kind of thing. And even like, my sister-in-law let us know that originally they had decided, like, her school district, it was like 2 days you could send them in, and then it was basically rotating it to keep the classes small, and they have now pulled that back and said it's going to be all remote learning. And
that's the plan for California.
Yeah.
Certainly in the states, in the counties rather, that are
right.
being most harshly affected.
Yeah.
And Sonoma County is among those. We're on the bad boy list.
Yep.
And we're going to have complete remote school next year. And I am extremely privileged to have my sister-in-law is here now. She moved here from Brooklyn during the
that's
pandemic.
That's nice.
And she is an early childhood educator, and we're just going to pay her to teach my 6 and 3 year old through the rest of the pandemic, hopefully.
Well, that's actually great. So you're very lucky.
Yeah, I recognize the luck that is there, and we're, you know, my wife and I are really concerned about people in our community who aren't going to have access to, like, pods that they can form with other people and, like, go in on a tutor or something, and that's going to be a huge gap, because even during the spring semester last year, or this, you know, last school year, we had kids zooming into our son's kindergarten class from the factory where his parents work.
Aww.
You know,
yeah, it's hard.
Not an equitable scenario by any means, and like, finding a solution that's going to provide equity during all of this without being able to, like, get together with people, and fundraisers are not what they, I mean, actually they've been online fundraisers around here have been doing really, really well, but it's still just going to be really difficult to find a solution that might be like, all right, but now we need to, like, find a pool of early, or, you know, childhood educators who can agree to take on a pod of 4.
Yep.
But then, you know, asking their parents not to socialize with it, or, like, be really, you know, have PPE everywhere they go or whatever, which is kind of what I think was the breakdown for me at summer camp.
Yep.
I'm pretty sure my kid got COVID.
Yep. And you're not the only one I'm hearing that kind of a story from. So, you know, I think we will wait to see. I'm, you know, and then the other part that's just been really disturbing was the change in the CDC getting the numbers and providing those, you know, to publicly. I think you can pretty much, I think we can all agree that there's a reason why, because the Trump administration doesn't want those out there. They had wiped them from the CDC website, and then they reappeared again, but only until the point where they basically stopped the hospitals from reporting them. And I really, truly think, I do think that there's going to be other reporting. Like, it has not affected the Johns Hopkins map that they have going out there. But I just think if I were a hospital, I'd probably still continue to report to the CDC if I were them. But I think this is just unheard of to have a private company that was paid to do the exact same reporting. And then to massage the numbers. I mean, we saw something very similar to this with what happened with Florida, where DeSantis basically told the hospitals, like, basically fired the company or the person who was doing that, and she set up her own shop, and actually her numbers are much more accurate than other places. And so I think we'll see some of that happening, but there is something to be said to have like all of the numbers going into one place. And to have, hopefully have it be an unbiased agency, which this is always how we have done this. And the CDC is an agency that has done this. They're trained to do it. And I just find this to be, I just can't believe it, honestly. And I think we're going to see, like, there will be, repercussions for this. So, so we'll see what happens. I hope there is something that happens so that that gets reversed, but I'm not very hopeful. Yeah.
November can't come soon enough.
Correct. So anyway, but there's that. Other things in New York that's been, you know, the other things that they decided against. So museums were supposed to open again, and they had very specific ways that they were going to open at like much reduced capacity. And again, everybody had to wear masks, and there's like a very, like the way that they were having people walk through the museums were supposed to be updated, but they have pulled that back, and that's now TBD again. It's the enclosed spaces that appears to be the biggest concern. So we'll see what happens with that. And I hope New York's numbers continue to be low. There's actually been a lot of people coming up apparently from Texas and Florida, probably because it seems safer here now. So I just worry that we will see a spike again, but I hope I'm wrong. So on that note, anything else to add to our epidemic news, our pandemic news?
No, yeah. Let's move on to talk about zombies.
Cool. We don't have that much news today, but you found this was actually kind of funny. Do you want to jump into this?
Well, you know, I've been complaining on this podcast for months throughout the pandemic. When are we going to get the release date to the season 10 Walking Dead finale? And last week, I think I even said the fact that there isn't news is news. And now this week, somehow they've made it news that they're going to announce the finale date, and we have a date for when they're going to announce the date, which is July 24th at Comic-Con online or at home or whatever.
Yeah,
they're really milking this. I mean, to some extent, it's working. It's building the anticipation.
Or they just didn't know, and they're just buying some time so that they can like figure it out. But yeah, I just thought it was funny. It's like, well, now we have a date to announce it. But, you know.
So, I mean, there's going to be a couple of interesting things going on at the Comic-Con. There will at least be a Walking Dead panel, a Fear the Walking Dead panel, apparently. And Max Brooks is getting a panel, hopefully not just him and maybe one or two other people, on zombie outbreaks, which will be interesting to hear because he's also been weighing in, as we talked about earlier on in the pandemic, on COVID.
Yep.
So, I think there should be some pretty interesting stuff. It's all of those are apparently happening on the 24th, and some of them are even happening at the same time.
Yep.
However, it's probably worth checking out, and I've never watched a panel from Comic-Con other than on YouTube, so this won't actually be that different for me.
Yeah, same. So, and in other news, there is a zombie book that just came out, fiction, hopefully, by Paul Tremblay, called Survivor Song, and apparently it's pretty well written, and they were commenting that, you know, what a difference a few months makes in terms of, like, the timing of releasing this, and so apparently the setting of this book is in New England, and there's a viral outbreak of this particular zombie apocalypse. And, you know, according to the review, it's pretty well written. Maybe we can get to this at some point. It just takes us a little longer to do the books versus, like, watching a film or whatever. But I was reading the synopsis, and I'm like, oh, man, this guy, like, what a tough time for a book like this to come out specifically. So
not as bad as the actual show Pandemic for on Netflix.
Correct,
remember?
correct. So in any case, you know, maybe we'll try to get to this at some point. But the review was pretty good overall.
They were glowing in their review of this book. I would like to pick it up for sure.
Yeah, so. Definitely.
It's been a long time since we've done a book. And honestly, H.A., I don't know if you've seen, we've had a couple of Zompoc authors reaching out to us.
I have not seen that, but
so it might be something we need to focus on, especially when we enter the long desert of content.
That's happening.
Must follow this soon. The thing is, it feels like content is still coming out. Like, I'm still being spoiled with watching new content. Like Hannah, the second season of Hannah came out on Amazon Prime. I haven't had a chance to watch it yet.
Oh, but I didn't even know that. So there you go.
Yeah. Dude, there's still great stuff coming out. I don't understand it. It's defying my ability to comprehend. But I have to assume that there will be a giant hole coming up soon, like a, just a dearth.
I did watch Old Guard, so that was, you know, on our list this week.
It's fun, right?
It's fun, you know, without giving away, and I'm not going to give spoilers, but yeah, you know, I definitely, look, you know, it's got a Highlander kind of Jason Bourne twist-ish. Mm-hmm. What I do wish they had done more with it, especially, like, you set up a cool premise like that. I want to know more about the history. So that stuff
prequels.
To me... Yeah, like, that kind of stuff is more interesting to me, or, like, I think the action stuff was great, and I liked it, but clearly, to me, it's almost like they're setting up a series, or maybe a series of films, who knows, but I liked it overall.
It's based on, you know, a very well-established...
Yeah. Yeah.
Comic,
yeah.
So that's why it feels like there's more there. I'm sure that there is.
And I will have to say, one of the most successful sort of ideas slash like creepy things about immortality, which is the you know, the person that is that makes the appearance at the very end. Mm-hmm. That whole visual with, you know, what happened to her, I thought was pretty incredible. Very much along the vein of stuff that happens to Wolverine in X-Men comics, but that's still kind of a cool... It was an interesting thing to put in the storyline, which I am assuming is from the comics, which I have never read. But anyway, so... On to our are we ready to talk about this review?
I'm not just ready, I'm excited. All right.
I'm not.
I would like to begin, if I may. Okay, so Yummy is the movie we're reviewing. It's from Shudder. Mm-hmm. It was directed by Lars Damoiseau and written by him and Evelyn Hagenbeek. It is a Belgian production. With Flemish, some French, a lot of English, and then maybe a made-up Eastern European language?
Maybe Polish, I don't know.
They don't ever subtitle it, and I think there were no actual non-Belgians in this, potentially. This is a pulp horror film. Of a certain genre, right? Of the boobs and the gore and the poorly executed effect creature.
Yep.
In addition to the zombies. And it checks a lot of boxes for that genre, and I'm not sure what the name of it is, and I should, because it's such a well established genre. What is this called?
This genre? It's basically like I would call it sleaze gore horror.
Ghoulies comes to mind a little bit. Those little weird Cabbage Patch Kids that came out of the toilets, and except that maybe there weren't as many boobs in that. Lots of boobs.
Yeah, this is very, you know, it's trying to do a specific thing. And it's also trying to be comedic about it. So I feel like they missed their mark. I think that it was pretty raunchy. But without having some of the better script writing that could make this a little bit better than it deserves to be. You know, I think it's the premise of it is kind of ridiculous too. I mean, you know, the whole, and then, you know, I do think that some of the effects were pretty good. I do not think it needed to be an hour and a half long by any means.
I mean, 89 minutes Jesus. Or 88. It's short.
It felt so long to me, and I was just like, oh my god, can we get this done with yet? I mean, it was sort of like, okay, we're going to move room to room, we're going to do this effect and that effect. All this, to me, it was sort of like, to me it felt like, oh, we're going to pull out this bag of tricks, oh, we've got to do this guts thing, we got to do this brain splattering thing, oh, okay. You know, and they had like their gags, all their gross gags that they wanted to get in there, and I just was like, is this really necessary? Like, to me, you could have cut out an entire half hour of this film. with no problem. But you know, but let's get into it. Wanna set it up?
So we've got this trio who are Allison, Michael, who I kept calling Poopy and Pookie because I couldn't remember their names for like most of the film, and then Mama, whose name also I don't remember, but it's apparently it's Sylvia.
Right.
And they are driving from probably Belgium because they're speaking Flemish to an unknown Eastern European destination. And even on the way there, there's a lot going on in this movie. There's like ogling scenes where we quickly figure out what Allison's issue is. She wants a breast reduction. She's tired of people staring at her, and the movie gives the audience no breaks in the amount of ogling. And then it even like subjects the audience to some ogling when she has to put on a ridiculously tight shirt later on in the film. But there's a lot going on in this movie. Like, I had a really hard time typing up my notes.
Really?
Because it was just like nonstop things happening. Like, just on the way to the hospital to begin the movie, you've got the bus scene, you've got the gas station scene where it that establishes that Michael's got an engagement ring, that he's good with fixing cars, that he's a klutz and shuts his own shirt in the hood, that, you know, Sylvia or Mama is, there's just like five or six things happening in every scene. That Mama doesn't think that Allison should get the breast reduction, yada, yada, yada. And then there's they run over that animal.
Whatever that might be.
Whatever that could have been, and it squeaks or whatever, and then it gets run over, and then there's the gore shot. I just feel like it was just constantly spinning. This movie was, they like every can you imagine storyboarding this thing?
Yeah. I mean,
it would have been crazy.
But that's my point. It kind of felt like they were trying to throw in every gag. It felt like a kitchen sink kind of a film in that they were like, okay, so immediately when they have the weird little animal and they just have Michael like puking and, you know, like, it was just sort of like, to me, it's like, oh, it's going to be one of these films. But I'll also say, you know, even when they're driving into this supposed clinic/hospital, their comments are like, oh, it looked better on the website. So that was always like, there was a lot of like gags about the fact that things looked better on the website with this thing and what people had seen on the website, or that they should go to the website. So that seemed to be kind of a running gag they had. But I will say, like, even just driving in there and the sort of consultation and just even walking through the halls, I don't know that I'd necessarily be like kind of getting, you know, surgery done there. And, you know, they've got Mikael basically calling out a lot of weird things, which it's like, you shouldn't really be drinking coffee in the operating room, and, you know, various other things like that, that basically like cue you into the fact that this is not a place that is necessarily on the up and up, but people come to it anyway. I don't think they do a great job at establishing the semi-villainous character, which is what's his name, Daniel,
is that Spike?
Spike, which is basically what he kind of looks like.
And he's a terrible person. I mean, if you don't feel like he's a villain within the first 5 seconds that he's on film.
He's a villain, but you just don't understand why he'd even be allowed in the hospital, really. Not only allowed in the hospital, but kind of given free rein and access, you know, to everything. Because clearly he's an nobody's in denial that he's not trustworthy, right? Or that there's just sort of like this thing about him that I was like, all right, I guess they just have to like make him mustache twirly enough, which he is. And you know, they basically go into the story to a point where it's just sort of like, well, I don't believe that Allison would actually do this. I don't think that Mikael would do this. I believe that, you know, Allison's mom, Sylvia, would definitely stay there because she wants to get like liposuction and stuff like that. But I just don't feel like they would actually go through with it. I think Allison and Michael would probably have left pretty early on and just, you know, gotten away from there. But that's not what happens. And, you know, they do a lot to establish the characters in a way that, you know, I guess makes sense a little bit later on. But like, Michael's like very skeptical of Spike, whatever the guy's name is. And
well, he's actually way nicer to him than he deserves. Like,
when that's what I'm saying.
When he first says dialogue with Allison, he's like, oh, I would buy you a car if I was your boyfriend, in front of
yeah.
the woman and the man he just saw making out.
Right.
And making fun of the fact that they call each other poopy or poopsie or whatever it is. He's just, I wouldn't even say he's a mustache twirler. I mean, you know that he's a bad guy, but it's just because he makes fun of and tries to undermine Michael every chance he gets while trying to clearly just get sex, as they say.
Yeah.
Get sex with Allison.
With everybody. He's just like that kind of a character. True. He's just sleazy and slimy.
He's super sleazy. And that doesn't necessarily jive with like Big Bad, but
right.
just he's a completely self-motivated character.
Yeah, and a drug. You know, he's also drug-seeking and always shooting himself up and taking pills and stuff like that. And then you've also got the other villains in this, which is the doctor and both doctors, I guess.
Kravchuk and, well, the other one is what, Lennick or?
I don't know. John.
Yona.
Yona?
Yona seems like a nice guy.
Oh, well, you've got Yona, but he's not, like, evil. But the other one I was going to say is the woman. What's her name? Oh, Janja? Yana?
Yana? Yeah.
I just Yona, call her Blondie. Yona or something like that. I don't know.
Yona is the other doctor.
Oh, sorry, sorry. The blonde evil doctor.
She felt like an administrator. I wasn't even sure if she was a doctor, but it turns out they laid, like, the whole
blame of everything on her.
Yeah. On her, yeah, at the, you know, halfway through the movie, which doesn't make a lot of sense. But yeah, so there's no good vibes at this hospital. Michael appropriately makes a fuss and is like, I went to 1 year of medical school, which then people just make fun of him for.
I know.
The movie does not give Michael ever any breaks.
Nope.
Only in that he survives things that look like they should have killed him.
Right.
Also that they, when he like passes out after being electrocuted and his eyes are still open, like,
yep.
What, does that happen to people? I've never.
I don't know.
I guess so.
Guess it did here.
It certainly did. He's just lying there with blood coming out of his head with his eyes open,
yep.
Not moving, apparently not breathing to the extent that everybody thinks he's dead. But then he wakes up 5 minutes later. It's like, what?
Yep. Wandering around with a nice concussion, blood loss. Like he's having a great day.
A couple of other characters get introduced. There's Mr. Schultz, the German pop singer, potentially,
yep.
who's
yep.
there for something to do with his groin. And then there's Oksana, who's there for tattoo removal. Which is,
yeah.
I think, supposed to be a funny note
yeah.
and a funny character, but she doesn't really land. They could have used some Joss Whedon in this movie for sure.
Yep. Yep. And so basically, you know, we've got the introduction of the horror element. We there was like kind of a cold open in the beginning where we see the doctor and an orderly putting a body into a furnace.
That was a pretty good scene.
And it was good. I mean, it was a good opener. And the janitor sort of hears like scratching coming from the incinerator and opens it up and gets kind of pulled in. But that, you know, to me, that's sort of like, okay, that was weird because later they establish that patient zero is this woman attached to this gurney that Michael releases. You know, so I don't know what happened with that cold open, but anyway. But basically the sort of premise of this whole thing is that they're running this euthanine clinic with stem cells from aborted fetuses, which is awesome. And they're using these, and this is what is causing the zombie virus. And it's kind of weird. Like, I just didn't, you know, so basically Michael and Spike let go this patient zero, and she just starts to wreak havoc upon the hospital. And pretty quickly, they're all just running away from this horde. The horde is established pretty quickly. One of the things which you and I always talk about that it just drives me nuts is that there's a very big difference depending on whoever it is, the time that it takes this thing to take hold. So suddenly there's like hordes of these things running around, but then we see later like when other people get bitten, it takes a really long time.
It feels like a while, but it's only really like 20 minutes
yeah.
too. And what helps to establish that believability that the horde would be this well established is that Michael manages to sedate himself because he is such a klutz.
Mm-hmm.
The second time he bursts into the OR and he gets the old syringe in the hand and then wakes up an indeterminate time later. So that to me sets the stage that, okay, this thing could be as far wide open as the showrunner, the director wants it to be.
Yeah.
And it is. It's everywhere. And I like the evacuation. Like, Blondie gets told that something's going wrong, and she does a good job, like, getting that across with her face after being haughty to Michael mm-hmm. on the gurney. She's then like, do you feel more calm? And then she looks scared, and she walks away. And then he goes, interrupts the OR a second time.
Yeah.
I guess it was the first time that he interrupted them that he got stabbed. So the interrupts them a second time, and then they get the message over the PA in this language that doesn't get translated ever. Okay, evacuate, I guess. And so they start to file out of the hospital, and everything seems fine until they get into the stairwell, and then things are clearly not fine. And I liked that scene, or that collection of scenes. It kind of sets up... like, they're not Michael and Allison aren't sure if the hospital staff are telling them to get out because they've lost their chance at surgery, or not necessarily really clear that there is an evacuation happening. Because they go looking for Mama, who's just had her, she had a whole list of things she was getting.
Yeah. Just like funny. A laundry list of
grin lift, tummy tuck, yeah. Bleaching. Oh, anal bleaching, yeah. Brazilian lift, eyelids. Mm. She's clearly a big fan of.
Yeah.
Plastic surgery.
Yeah. And so they go looking for her, which is why they're not sort of in the first wave. We've also got the Schultz dude and Oksana hiding out in there together. You know, and basically, as this unfolds, we eventually get all the survivors together, though there's like a really super, this, I feel, again, this is like not my bag. I feel like the sleaze porn / torture porn thing is just, like, gross. But they have a whole sex scene between Oksana and Schultz because it's, like, the last thing. And, you know, they end up burning his penis, which had been there for, it was, like, a penis enlargement or something like that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, eventually we get this sort of core group of survivors together, although Oksana doesn't join them till later. But we've got... you know, the doctor, we've got Johanna or whatever his name is. We've got the other doctor. We've got Alice and her mom and Michael. And, you know, and they're basically going through these different scenes of different parts of the hospital. And as I said, they pull every single bag of tricks out. And some of it's like kind of super gross, like, you know, we've got the gut zombies, we've got like torso zombies, like pretty much mm-hmm. any sort of trope that you would see in a film is here.
Fair and, amount of amputees get used in this film.
Yeah, lots of amputees, lots of like, but then they do like kind of gross tropes where it's like they show one of the zombies basically looking like he's giving oral sex to one of the bodies. Yeah. It was pretty gross. And then, you know.
That guy is credited in the credits as Dodgy Doctor.
Oh, nice. And I mean, and you've got a lot of those like sort of the moments where they do the camera work where it's like really kind of claustrophobic and close up where it's like you're chasing after the survivors. And they're sort of establishing different things. And I mean, look, there's moments of humor because like, you know, Allison's mom, Sylvia, gets bitten. The doctor, Dr. K, knows that this is what's going on and basically says we have to do her in. We've seen this trope in so many movies. And then he gets basically infected by the mom. And then it's suddenly like, well, let's find a cure. And there is...
yeah, let's make a vaccine. This triggered you in no other way.
Right.
Because they basically make three, I think, or two or three trial vaccines in about 2.5 minutes.
Yeah. And so that whole thing is like, you know, and then we have like the, you know.
Also in this scene, it starts to establish that Allison is feeling like less into Michael. And the thing that drives her away from him is that he hesitates before he can slam an axe head into her mother's face.
Yeah.
And then she starts to like push him away and hug Spike. And you start, you know, as an audience, we're like, what? What's going on here? Michael has never stopped trying.
Right.
He's got hemophobia, you guys. It's a real thing.
And and then there's, you know, the whole thing where the other doctor gets bitten because Michael does a pretty bad job at holding the mom's head.
No, he holds on to it real fine. It's just that her hair and her scalp come off in his hand.
I guess.
It's gross.
It is gross.
And then Yona puts his hand in a shredder.
Yep.
which is amazing and gross. I know, I kind of enjoyed all of these little, not all of them, but a lot of these little moments, even though it was just frantic, it's kind of funny.
Yeah. And then, you know, we sort of go the way through the hospital, and eventually we get them to, like, they ultimately end up on the roof. And, you know, we've also got, we have interactions between Spike and the female doctor, whatever her name is, Diana or whatever. And they, like, he's still sleazy. And you show that they have no love lost between them. And, you know, he's still sort of like, I don't know. I feel like he's pushing an agenda that seems like he could maybe push this later, but he's trying to try to blackmail her because it turns out that she's the source. She's the person who started all these, like, horrible trials.
And it turns out she's not such a good person.
Yeah, either. Yeah.
Because when she comes up with a plan to get him to get bitten, I don't know why she thought that was going to stop him from trying to murder her.
Right.
Because it didn't. Yeah, and he did.
Yeah. And
but then what is interesting here is his motivation. What is his motivation after he's bitten to keep going? And it turns out it's rape.
Sex. Because that's what's on everybody's mind, I guess. And that just seemed ridiculous to me. And
that is a real stretch, and it, you know, by the time that scene comes around, really close to the end of the film, you're like, oh, what? Okay, I guess you're just that much of an asshole.
Yep.
But
yeah. But I mean, basically, they leave no, like, stone unturned here. Nobody gets out of this unscathed. And then even when they actually get to the point where they're trying to escape the hospital and they see soldiers and things like that. This was the whole thing with the tattoo, Oksana's tattoo removal, which says basically destiny misspelled across her, you know, lower spine, a tramp stamp, if you will. And, you know, it, like, basically they're not going to get out of it alive. And there's just this sort of hopelessness until they then are. And, you know, I would say the army has probably pretty good reason, or the soldiers have good reason for trying to shut this down, as we see. But ultimately, this group releases this horde upon
the world. I don't know that they released it.
Michael does. Okay,
it seems that way. Michael releases some of them from the sewers after he blows himself up, but survives, amazingly.
Yep.
You see zombies crawling out of the sewers. But then as Allison is driving away after she's run Spike over multiple times, which was pretty nice to have that scene. She takes care of herself, which I appreciate.
Yep.
She's driving away, and there are people in hospital scrubs at the gas station who are not covered in the mud from the sewers from Michael's explosion.
I guess you're right.
And so it seems as if containment has been broken. I don't know how they got out there, but, I mean, if the army hadn't shown up right as the thing happened, I mean, it wouldn't be that hard to believe that that they don't have containment. Anyway, so this thing is all over the place. Allison looks like she's going to get away. And then somehow Michael has, in the catacombs, managed to out-sprint her car.
Yep.
And also, she's driving with only, like, a thumb on one hand because it was a really gross scene.
That was pretty disgusting.
Fingers getting cut off.
Yep. With glasses, which, like, would never happen. Sorry. But anyway, like, I think that, and so basically everybody that ends up dead. There's no survivors, at least with this group that we've been following. And, like, as I said, I think if the script had been slightly less focused on putting all these gags in and putting all these tropes in, it probably would have been better. And it doesn't get to the point where I mean, there's, like, some funny moments, but it doesn't quite get to the level that you would expect, because I do think they're trying to mix genres a little bit too much here. And personally, for me, this is just not my thing. And the whole, like, I don't know, the treatment of women in this film is just really disgusting to me. So it wasn't my cup of tea at all. And it's like, I don't think that they're trying to say that this was right. I think they're in agreement that it's disgusting, but it's like, I don't think that we necessarily needed to have that as part of the film for it to have been successful. But
what, when you say treatment, do you mean, like, what specifically? Just the fact that there are young women being objectified?
Yeah, and I mean, that's sort of their big gag, is that, like, all this stuff about her boobs, all this stuff about, like, plastic surgery. I mean, even to the treatment of, like, when Oksana runs out to the police and they, or the soldiers, and they, like, do a butt shot with her thong and all that shit. Like, I just think it's just bullshit, personally. I don't think we need another film like this, and I think you can do it in much better ways. Like, I'd much rather see a Mia Jovovich type story than this kind of story. So, or if you're going to have it and you're going to have this objectification, maybe you have, like, the women sort of turning things around.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I hear that. And the Schultz, the part with Schultz where they're, I think, trying to balance the scales does not go, it goes pretty far and pretty gross with his enlargement issue and the how Oksana inadvertently, he does it to himself too. Like, he pours boiling water on himself and then lights it on fire and then it breaks off. And it's pretty great. But it's not enough to balance the scales.
No. And I mean, look, I will tell you that one of the things that bothered me so much was exactly what you just said, is that the motivation for this Spike character guy was all that he wanted to get out there and, like, rape Allison. And it was like, yeah, she got away, but is this really necessary? I don't know. I just thought it was just ridiculous.
Yeah, absolutely. It definitely could have been handled differently. But I was happy that she was able to extricate herself by herself. And I think Allison is, like, a silver lining to this film. She's a strong character. She, like, saves her mother, or tries to. She doesn't really need Michael or Spike, although they do help her at times. I like the fact that she's basically independent and can handle herself, but it's not enough to balance everything else out.
No. So personally, not my thing. Maybe it's some people's thing, but just, I can't recommend it. So that's where I come out on it.
Fair enough. It's doing pretty well on Rotten Tomatoes, 67%. A lot of people don't like it, though. RogerEbert.com, they thought it was horrible. And then that's probably the only big outlet that has reviewed it. Everybody else are like Bloody Disgusting and others. And Bloody Disgusting thought it was pretty okay, calling it a... a reverent crowd pleaser. Mm. So that's all we got. Yummy was a one thumbs down, one thumb halfway up, because I don't know, it checked some of the boxes for me, but could have been better, could have been funnier. I will eat those words later, I'm sure. So next time we are going to review Reality Z, the Brazilian take on Dead Set, for our next episode. So join us again then. And if you want to get in touch with us and tell us how much you loved or hated Yummy, you can send us an email at reanimatedpodcast@gmail.com, reanimatedpcast on Twitter, and reanimatedpodcast.com on the internets.
And also, apparently, we have a Gmast address now.
Gmast is the new hotness.
In any case, thanks everybody for listening, and hope to hear from you next time. Have a good rest of your weekend, and ciao.
Alrighty, thank you. Bye-bye.